Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Good evening. You are listening to Barkley and Barton here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the fountains of knowledge on all things Manchester United, Patrick Barkley and Wayne Barton. Now, if you are a regular listener to the show, you'll be well aware that we are ploughing our way through a post-war history on the Red Devils. If you're a new listener, welcome. We are now into episode 5, which is quite simply Cantona.
This is Love Sport.
So this is episode 5, and gents, I could not be more excited. It is time to drink to the man they call the king. But just how that man arrived at Old Trafford, Paddy, is a tale so many tell and so many lay claim to.
Yeah, and it is worth dwelling upon in detail, because I worked for, I suppose, nearly 40 to 50 years in journalism covering football. And Cantona may not have been the greatest player I ever saw. I saw Diego Maradona in the flesh and Lionel Messi and all that. But he was certainly the greatest catalyst by a long, long way. And I include Maradona at Naples in that. In terms of transforming a club in a way that, in my opinion, still lingers spiritually, if not, you know, necessarily always in the style of play. There has been nothing to compare with the relationship. So that's why it is so vital part of the history that we will now deal in detail with how it came for Eric Cantona to come to. Now, Wayne, you've studied this in probably even more detail than me. There are a few versions of how it came about.
Yeah, he was enfant terrible, wasn't he, in France. And a player, like you said, wasn't perhaps rated as the best around, but certainly was highly rated. He'd enjoyed some success in France.
Particularly in combination with Papin.
Oh, yeah.
What a combination.
He loved Cantona, funnily enough, for someone who is idolised by so many. I had some idols, and Papin was one of those.
Oh, really?
Absolutely, yeah. And he had his disciplinary troubles in France and was being shipped around to English clubs.
Yeah, well, it started off with Sheffield Wednesday, where he went to join Trevor Francis. But Trevor Francis, I mean, Trevor was a football man, is a football man, knew the good and the bad with Cantona, but he had a good team, didn't want it disrupted. And Eric's history was one of disruption at that time. And for some reason, he didn't feel he'd seen enough. And he asked him, he more or less said, you know, do an audition. To which Eric replied quite colourfully that he didn't do auditions.
Eric was playing a game at one of Sheffield Wednesday's training grounds, because the winter that year was bitter. Sheffield Wednesday's Middlewood training ground was frozen out, so they had to go and play on one of the old weather pitches in Rotherham, where Leeds would often use those facilities. And Cantona scored an hat-trick against, I think it was an Oldham reserve side or something, and Leeds had some spies there, not deliberately to watch Cantona, but they had employees around, you know, watching the game. Well, allegedly, they had spies and employees watching the game. Cantona was holed up at Sheffield Wednesday, got him in a Holiday Inn, and it was the worst room in the Holiday Inn, apparently. And so Wilkinson got wind of this. He was implored to go and speak to Cantona, convinced maybe to go and speak to Cantona, considering that he didn't want to upset the balance of his team. But I think they needed an extra forward in there. Leeds weren't particularly affluent at the time. Cantona was arriving on a bargain. They just had to pay the loan fee to get him for the rest of the season. And from there, I think the story goes, it's more colourfully told with Cantona saying, I don't do auditions. But the idea was that the misunderstanding, Cantona thought he had signed for Sheffield Wednesday. And Sheffield Wednesday said, no, it's only a trial. And Cantona got particularly offended by that. So said, I'll go and get someone who will give me a contract, which turned out to be Leeds.
Yeah. And at this time, the French national manager was Michel Platini, who'd attempted to place him with Liverpool before that, only to have Graham Souness, the manager of Liverpool, decline the offer. Obviously, no one to have an extra problem. Something that he might have reflected upon at leisure later. But he also asked Gerard Houllier, who at that time was Platini's assistant, to try his own contacts in England. So he rang the agent, Dennis Roach, who was pretty famous or infamous in the game at the time. And he it was who arranged for Cantona to have the trial with Sheffield Wednesday. But when the trial went wrong, Howard Wilkinson, down the road at Leeds, got wind of the disenchantment. He then got in touch with Houllier. This was all, you know, Houllier's account of it. And he said, should I try for Cantona? And Houllier replied, take him with your eyes closed. You cannot go wrong with this guy. Anyway, Leeds paid Nîmes £1 million for his transfer. But the relationship with Howard Wilkinson and between Wilkinson and Cantona was really rocky, always. And Cantona was often substituted or used as a substitute. For instance, there was Leeds had a playoff, a European playoff in Barcelona against Stuttgart. Wilkinson took Cantona off in favour of a striker, Carl Schott, who scored. Then in the next round, they played Rangers in Glasgow. Again, Cantona was taken off. And again, Houllier comes into the story. Because when the second leg was played down at Elland Road, Howard Wilkinson invited Gerard Houllier to the match. And he was sitting next to Alex Ferguson. So he and Houllier and Ferguson knew each other. They'd met in Mexico during the 1986 World Cup. And again, the match went badly for Eric Cantona. Again, the subject of Cantona came up. And again, Houllier said, take him in a heartbeat. Take him with your eyes closed. Don't worry about him. He will not be a problem. It'd be anything but. And how right was he?
The relationship with that and the background to Houllier suggesting the move so quickly after Leeds. Obviously, Cantona had an impact at Leeds, helping them win the First Division title. He scored 3 goals. Incidentally, the same number as John Newsome, the erstwhile defender. And the idea that he made a significant contribution irked some of the more senior players and management at Leeds because it all became about Cantona. In fact, Wilkinson was quite often quoted as saying, it's not about Cantona, it's about Leeds United.
Yeah.
Start of the Premier League season, Cantona obviously scored the hat-trick against Liverpool in the Charity Shield. Mm. His importance to the team was taking extra prominence. Mm. Around that time, because of the troubles in which he'd left France, he'd had a suspension from the domestic game and he was sort of exiled from the international team as well.
Yeah.
He was called back in as Houllier had become French coach, the national team coach in the meantime, as Platini left in Euro 92. And Houllier called Eric back up to the French national team. But the first game coincided with a Leeds and Liverpool game. And Cantona refused the call-up because he wanted to show his commitment to Leeds. Houllier went to visit Eric, I think it was a month after that, to sort of ingratiate himself again and say, come on, come back to the national side. In which time, the relationship between Cantona and Wilkinson had soured tremendously. Mm. And Houllier was able to get this personal perspective on Cantona's place.
That's right. Cantona actually asked for a transfer from Leeds. And by his own testimony, he said he, in fact, requested this transfer by fax. And the translation of his fax is that the salmon that idles its way downstream will never leap the waterfall. And that makes it probably the second most famous fish metaphor he ever used.
Well, he had previous. There you go.
Once this transfer had been requested through Jean-Jacques Bertrand, the French agent, Houllier got on the line to Alex Ferguson, got hold of him in his car phone. This was in November 1992. and reiterated, you know, a lot is talked about Eric and how difficult and how tempestuous he is, but he's actually a tremendous professional. And Alex told Ullier, yeah, I'll definitely take him. But he asked Ullier, don't talk about this anymore. So obviously, it wasn't just an idea. You know, in other words, Ferguson was not just adding him to a list of possible targets. He had made him his target. We then go to the fateful phone call, which was in fact made by Leeds United's director of football, a gentleman called Bill Fotherby. And he rang Martin Edwards at Old Trafford. And Wayne, you can take up the story now because you're the expert on that.
Yeah, this was the thing that always struck me as the most remarkable coincidence of it, because on the Monday, Cantona faxes in the transfer request, and on that transfer request also specified three clubs, Arsenal, Manchester United and Liverpool. And then the day after that, Fotherby calls Edwards, which is, that's the amazing coincidence of this, because that is completely unrelated. He calls Martin Edwards asking to sign Dennis Irwin, at which point the accounts vary depending on who you listen to and who wants to take credit for it. The one that I tend to believe is probably most accurate or most reliable is that Martin Edwards took the phone call and he recounted an earlier conversation he'd had with Irving Scholar, who was the former Monaco chairman and former Spurs as well. And he'd said to Martin Edwards that Cantona looks very much a Manchester United player, and if you ever get the chance, get him in your team. Now, whether or not that phone call from Ullier to Ferguson had happened the night before...
But had not... Wasn't it also fortuitous that Alex Ferguson happened to be in the room with Martin Edwards and scribbled a note saying, ask him about Cantona?
Well, here's the variation. Is Martin Edwards claims that Alex Ferguson was on the training pitch and Martin Edwards called Ferguson and said, they've asked about Dennis Irwin. Ferguson swore and said no. And Martin Edwards said, well, I suggested taking Cantona off their hands. Would you want him if I can get him? And Ferguson said, to effing right, I would.
Yeah.
And then the story of how the actual negotiation is how that went down is brilliant, because Leeds wanted rid of him. They were happy to get him off Wilkinson's mind, really, because he was causing such a disruption. They were... You know, he was walking off the training pitch, you know, in a huff and everything like that. Fotherby said, well, we need to sell him, but I want 1.5 million, so we've made a little bit of a profit. And he said, well, I'll give you a million. I'll give you, this is what Martin Edwards said to Fotherby, I'll give you £1 million, I'll give you the money back, what you spent. And he said, I can't do that, I'll get lynched. And the negotiation went as it went, and he said, well, what about 1.4? He said, no, I'm not paying more than 1 million. He said, well, what about 1.2? He said, I'm not paying more than £1 million for him. He said, they will lynch me. He said, well, what if I tell them, Father? He said, what if I tell everyone that you paid 1.5? And Edward said, you can tell them what you want, but we're only paying 1 million. And they agreed to that deal. And over the next day or so, I mean, it was agreed immediately, that transfer.
And the effect of Cantona on Manchester United, I mean, we could talk for ages. Probably the simplest way of putting it is that in that season so far, United had played, I think, about 18 matches. We're now talking November. They had averaged almost exactly one goal per match. In the rest of the season, with Cantona in their team, they averaged two goals a match. It is as simple as that. In other words, he demonstrably, measurably, made United twice the team they had been before. And that's why I say he's the greatest catalyst that any club has ever had.
This is Love Sport.
Eric Cantona's first goal for Manchester United has seen to that. He knows how to celebrate all right, and he knows how to finish. Great cross by Sharp. Phelan did just enough, and Cantona, swivelling well, turned it beyond Hitchcock. And Cantona has already knocked in 11 for Leeds United this season, has now knocked in one for Manchester United.
Now, Paddy, you've just explained how Cantona's arrival pretty much had an instant impact at United. He was the first player to score a hat-trick in the Premier League, of course. That was for Leeds. He'd played against United earlier on in the campaign. I recall the commentators, it was a match on Sky Sports, from memory, fawning over his ability in that game. He tested Schmeichel with an overhead kick out of absolutely nothing. He then arrived at Manchester United, as you've just described in the previous section. It took him a while to acclimatise, to be fair. He scored in his third game against Chelsea. That was a draw at Stamford Bridge. It was the start of a four-game goal-scoring run, the last of which, Wayne, was that pivotal Spurs game you'd mentioned in a previous show. It was just his sixth game since signing for the club, and goes to show, doesn't it, how after that mini teething period you once described, he instantly became an integral cog in what was to eventually be a title-winning team.
Yeah, and he was, like Paddy said earlier about the instant impact on the changing the goals ratio, that Spurs game was the game where Cantona arrived. That was his statement of intent at United. For the first couple of games, it seems ridiculous to think about, but Cantona couldn't find a place because it was such an opportune signing. Ferguson didn't know where to put him in the side. That's why he started on the bench at, against City, because he didn't know where he was going to put him in the side. He was loyal to McClare. He knew McClare could play further back, but he was loyal to him. And obviously, if you move McClare further back, you drop in one of Vincent Robson. I know Robson was having his injury problems at the time, so that worked itself out, really, that Cantona would come into that role. But because McClare was still making that transition, it wasn't an easy choice to make. So there was the idea of playing Cantona on the wing. There was the idea, I think for a few minutes in one of the games, it might have been against Norwich, he played in midfield. You know, so there was a lot of messing around with him to try and get him in the side. But then as soon as they found that, I think it was like, hey presto, it's like dynamite straight away. And apart from the European games, which we'll talk about later, on a domestic level, he never moved from that deep lying forward position. And he transformed that team absolutely. They looked like a completely different team. And they were good before. They were a very good side before. Potentially the best in the country. One of the best in Europe, as they'd already proven by winning the Cup Winners' Cup. But they were completely different under Cantona. Cantona's attitude on and off the pitch, you know, he stayed behind after training. His attitude towards his diet made the other players stand up and take notice. It breathed a bit of a late resurgence into the career of Mark Hughes, who suddenly found his niche as this player who could hold up the ball and bring others into the game, such as Eric, such as Kanchelski, such as Giggs. Whereas before he was playing as a conventional strike pair with McClare, and an effective one. But he transformed everything about those players in that they all. It was almost like their personal qualities were enhanced by what Cantona was bringing along. And Cantona himself had that Gallic flair, that arrogance. Do you know,
The Tottenham game, I think, was, yeah, you rightly identify as that. I think it was 4-1, was it?
Yeah.
And that gave United the leadership, and they responded to that. You know, they weren't. They didn't wobble, but in fact, I know they lost only two more league matches in the whole season. Can you remember? They were both away matches. Can you remember where they were? They were to clubs that are no longer in the top two divisions.
Yeah, Oldham
was
right.
The other one?
It was Ipswich, wasn't it?
Correct.
Yeah. Frank
Very
Gallup.
Good. I once again, foolishly, I challenged you and I was slapped down. And that was it. And I suppose, yeah, that took us towards Sheffield Wednesday game, and again at home, and the final run in.
Yeah, absolutely. Seven games, like we said, to win the title. And then if you go into the following campaign, 93-94, this is where he really came into his own. And we know the goals, I'm sure, Wayne, you'll talk about. The great volley, of course, away at Wimbledon. You can look at a brilliant counter-attack goal, I remember, away at Sheffield United, where they went from one end of the pitch to the other in the space of about 10 seconds. For me, the Manchester derby, of course, coming back from two down, I remember a line from Martin Tyler, the commentator on Sky Sports at the time, just said, Cantona just looks like he's conducting an orchestra.
And then that was it. And in that year, he got nominated for the Ballon d'Or as well. That's how rapidly his star had risen from this outcast of the game to one of the leading players within it. He was phenomenal in that 93-94 season. A lot of those players were on the top of their game. I mean, the United went on a record unbeaten run, didn't they? Something like 34 games, as they looked like they'd win a domestic treble. The only reason probably why they didn't was because of Eric's suspensions and disciplinary issues towards the back end of the season. But when he was on song in that campaign, as he invariably was, United were brilliant, and he was brilliant. I mean, in any kind of game, he could turn it on against the smaller sides. Mm-hmm. He could be the leading figure in the biggest occasions. He was outstanding, and without a shadow of a doubt, he was the best player in the British game at the time.
Yeah, I think also you've got to give credit. I mean, yes, it was a romantic story, but it didn't happen without a fair bit of intelligence going into it, particularly the psychological intelligence of Ferguson. Ferguson, you know, this well-known disciplinarian, didn't discipline Eric Cantona at all. He realised that the only way to get him disciplined was to get him to discipline himself, because he wouldn't take orders from anybody else. And that was brilliant. That contributed to the fact that he settled down so quickly. And had he been constrained under a more, shall we say, orthodox manager, I don't think it would have worked anything like the dramatic way it did.
I find that element fascinating as well, and it surprises me that it didn't make the dressing room more divisive to an extent. And Lee Sharp, you read, I know we've spoken about him a lot on previous podcasts, you read his book, and he almost sounds a little bit bitter about Cantona, because Sharp had his own ways. He liked to shave his head. I think he recalled one story where Sharp came down with a shaved head and Fergie laid into him.
Yeah.
About 10 minutes later, Cantona walks down, shaved head, Fergie didn't say a thing.
I think Cantona could have got away with anything except possibly an earring. Because Ferguson, hated a lot of things. You know, any sort of sign of individuality, you know, like shaving your head when you didn't need to. But if Cantona had tried an earring, whether he'd got away with that, that's probably the great unanswered question of Manchester United's history.
I think it's notable that you mentioned Lee Sharp, though, because he was, as we said earlier, in one of the earlier shows, that his later indiscipline and his later inability to sort of adhere to what Ferguson wanted did see him outcast. A lot of the other senior players at the club, and Sharp was a little bit younger, so perhaps we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but a lot of the older players did tolerate it. They were more than happy for Cantona to be allowed this leeway and for him to be given carte blanche to do what he wanted from Ferguson, because as long as he was producing.
There was the famous one about the Lord Mayor's, the Lord Mayor of Manchester's reception. I don't know which trophy it had been after, but Ferguson had said, club blazer, club tie, black shoes, neat hair and so on. And of course, all the players did exactly that. Eric turns up in a shell suit. And Ferguson said nothing. And all the players said, look, if that had been any of us, if there'd been Scholes, they'd have been, given such a verbal pummeling and told to go home and change. But no, with Eric, Fergie pretended not to notice.
Well, we'll get on to a specific moment in the next section or so, but that hot-headedness that you alluded to, Wayne, the double sending off, Swindon and then Arsenal, for obliterating John Moncur's stomach, has to be said, at Swindon. And then it was a double yellow, wasn't it, against Arsenal, which was, it was quite innocuous, challenge.
His reputation preceded him on that one. But I think the interesting thing about John Moncur, Roy Keane absolutely tore into this one in his first autobiography about, you know, how Swindon raised the game and how they were antagonising Cantona everywhere they went. And John Moncur actually voted for Cantona as the player of the year that season. John Moncur's history with Cantona is brilliant. I spoke to him about a year ago for the book I was writing with Eric, on Eric. John was one of those traditional midfielders. Like, he those sort of Cockney midfielders who would try and get it up here, and like they really liked to have a fight, and he was unashamed about that. You know, he loved doing it, and he tried to wind Cantona up, and he got the price of it. You know, to be fair, John Moncur had a good game that day, and I think he was showing off a little bit, and he got the, you know, he bore the brunt of it. So probably
honestly,
still got the stud marks.
You two, I mean, if we were talking about Genghis Khan, you two might just about agree that he showed a lot of enthusiasm.
But Eric, in that period as well, because he played on the edge and United were playing on the edge, it wasn't just Eric who had disciplinary issues at that side. At that time, Kanchelskis was sent off for a handball, but you had Schmeichel was sent off for a rush of blood to the head. A lot of players were getting disciplinary issues, accumulated bookings.
Was that when Ferguson called them in?
Yeah, that was after if you remember the Norwich game where Jimmy Hill...
it was a cup tie, I think.
Yeah,
and Cantona, now that was a bad, even you two, that was a real bad foul on, was it Jeremy Goss or something?
I think so, yeah.
And Jimmy Hill quite legitimately spotlighted it on TV. Was it after that he quietly called the players, that Ferguson called the players together and said, listen, we're picking up too many?
Yeah, his public face and his private face was...
And he told them this, he gives them this lecture, and he kept a straight face. But the players couldn't. Well, they did. As soon as he'd gone out of the room, they all walked down. He says, now get out. And they walked down the stairs. And, of course, they went into gales of laughter at the notion of Ferguson telling them to be a bit more less aggressive. But they did seem to see the point, because The disciplinary record did improve after that.
Yeah, but
it would have been hard not to.
It was terrible in that period. There were a lot of red cards, a lot of yellow cards, a lot of aggressive. It did look like it was going to boil over, and it threatened to derail United's season at that point, especially when Cantona was suspended. He'd been in such great form. He'd scored that goal against Wimbledon, which is still one of the greatest I've ever seen, the flick up and the volley. It was absolutely incredible. But his general form around that had been great. And if anyone was doubting how important he'd been to United in that 18-month spell, they were left with no doubt when he was out and United were dropping points all over the place.
Chelsea's coming in. Elkins header and he goes to Cantona! A glorious goal! 2 minutes before half-time and what can you do about that? Quite amazing. It's all about the magic of Eric Cantona. Watch the way he just backs away, takes one touch to set it up. And what about the quality of their volley? Quite sensational. One to admire.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Love Sport.
So, Wayne, the ban was served, and in the grandest of circumstances, cometh the hour, cometh the man, he returned for the Manchester derby.
Yeah, before the game, Steve McMahon, former Liverpool player, said that he'd been in the press saying, I'm going to show Eric what for. He's not going to have a kick against me. Cantona scored twice in the first half to put United's season back on track. And from then on, they never really looked like throwing the league away. I mean, they had a runaway league lead in the Premier League from the first few weeks because they were winning every week. And Blackburn were the nearest challengers. And during Eric's suspension, Blackburn won against United to really put it on the edge. But Cantona came back and he changed the course of that title race, really. Scored a vital goal at Ipswich as well. And then he played in the FA Cup final. He had a back injury. He had to have painkillers. Famously, for a player who never, ever... I think he was brought off twice by Alex Ferguson. Twice ever. One of those times was against Wimbledon in 1996 when Beckham scored from the halfway line. He was going to bring him off in the FA Cup final at half-time. Unthinkably was going to do that because of a sciatic problem that Cantona had. And before the game, they'd been talking about penalties. Steve Bruce had put his hand to take a penalty, but Cantona remained on the pitch. Bruce obviously
scored a lot. Yeah,
he did score a lot of penalties, and it would have been him or Dennis Irwin who would have stepped up. But Cantona, after a dodgy first half, it wasn't a great game against Chelsea in the FA Cup final in '94. Chelsea had beaten United twice in the league, had the measure of them physicality wise. They know how to play against them. First half, I think Gavin Peacock hit the crossbar with a great effort. And United were looking ropey again until they won one penalty, which they were certainly deserved. One penalty that perhaps might not have been. But, you know, Cantona scored both of those goals and had an influence on the game. Perhaps not his best game in the final, but it's remembered for Cantona scoring those two penalties. And rightly so, really, because he deserved that kind of memory for the impact that he'd had that season.
So that's two titles on the bounce. The double campaign, of course, of 93-94. We move into 94-95. Now, like we said previously, something was just starting to bubble away under the surface with Cantona. There were the two red cards the previous campaign. We saw a red card in pre-season at Rangers. Also tried a Panenka in that game. Didn't score, which is quite interesting. But again, just showed his charisma. But like we said, Wayne, something was just starting to stir. There was the game with Galatasaray as well, treated pretty badly in Turkey, let's be honest.
Yeah, and he was. And because that had been such a tempestuous game, Cantona wasn't seen as the figurehead of that. He was seen as one of a number of individuals who were victimised by the Turkish police. But when he came back, those incidents against Arsenal and Swindon, particularly the Arsenal one, Cantona was really aggressive about that referee. He was calling him blind and everything like that. And that bubbled under the press for a long time. There was the suggestion that his ban would be increased because of the way that he was going on about it. And then in the summer, at the World Cup, France didn't qualify, but he was there on commentary duties for French TV, and he was involved in a scuffle before one of the games there. And it didn't really amount to very much, but he was detained for a while because some bouncer had taken offence to him. So there was all this bubbling away. Now, obviously, like you said, there was the Glasgow Rangers incident, which meant he was suspended for two games at the start of the season as well. He scored in the Charity Shield against Blackburn, but then he missed a couple of league games. And there wasn't this idea that Cantona had calmed down after his red card. In fact, it seemed like United's disciplinary issues were still bubbling away.
Mm.
Oh, what's going on here? Cantona's getting involved with some supporters. Oh, this is outrageous. It's all got wildly out of hand, and once more, Eric Cantona is the man at the centre of a dramatic controversy.
Which takes us neatly to Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace against Manchester United. And bear in mind, this is at a time when Alex Ferguson is saying our discipline record has really improved since he read the Riot Act. Considering that everyone's trying so hard against us in every game we play. Typical Ferguson stockade mentality, that, isn't it? Then they go to Selhurst Park. Cantona is sent off for a foul on Richard Shaw, the central defender of Crystal Palace. He's clearly in a bad mood as he's walking round the touchline. Really, the pro-United bias should be left to you two lads, but I thought that bloke deserved a kicking. I really did, and so did most of the country, actually. I think it was an ethnically aggravated obscenity that he hurled at Cantona. Cantona just completely saw red, leapt over the fence and launched his kung fu assault on the guy, making fairly good contact, actually.
He made very good contact, yeah. Norman Davies, the kit man, wasn't quite able to grab hold of him, was he?
No. And I think most of the country was quite glad Norman was a wee bit late on the draw there. But anyway, I mean, it did prove very, very costly. And it was a crisis for Alex Ferguson and Manchester United. I mean, it called into question, I suppose, Ferguson's way of dealing with Cantona. So it was very, very difficult for him and for the club. Do you feel, Wayne, that the club's attitude was quite right, basically holding their hands up straight away? And
I think they had no other choice, you know. And they did. I think they dealt with everything fairly, the best way that they could in that situation. They obviously suspended Cantona themselves. They took immediate action on that. There was a story that Ferguson's initial reaction was that we're going to have to let him go. That's what he'd initially decided on when he'd seen. He didn't see it unfold as it happened. Mm. He was alerted to it and later saw the footage. So he didn't see it actually happen live. But when he saw it later on, he thought there's no way that we can keep him.
Yeah.
He was more or less convinced by the people around him to sort of give him another chance after the dust had settled a little bit and he didn't manage to talk to Cantona. Cantona was apologetic, but not so much that he felt deeply ashamed of what he'd done. He was apologetic that he'd done it, but not so much that I'm ashamed of why I've done it. And that very quickly turned itself around into Cantona being very defensive about what he'd done and painting himself as a victim, which made for a pretty amusing 6 or 7 months in the British press. Because I think then, and it's an argument that I've made, is that I think as much as he was a catalyst for Manchester United, as Paddy said earlier, he was also a catalyst for the change in the British game. They've been wanting a figure like this since Paul Gascoigne, but unfortunately been in Italy. And Cantona was such a colourful character. He was such an outcast in that we didn't really understand him. And because he was so good, it made him such an exotic character. Yeah. We wanted to know more. We were fascinated. But when he was successful for Manchester United, everyone else hated him.
Mm.
So you had this other facet in, and as soon as he did what he did, it made him public enemy number one, and it moved him from the back page to the front page, where he remained.
That's absolutely right. And the suspension was what, 8-9 months by the FA?
Yeah. United suspended him to the end of the season, and the FA added another 4 months.
They went to September and added an extra 10,000 to the 20,000 that United had
found. And on top of that, of course, the police had little choice but you know, after all, it was hardly done round the back of the sheds, was it? So Cantona had to go to court. And what was the sentence? It was community service, wasn't it? 120 days.
It was community service, yeah. I don't know whether he spent it... Did he end up spending it with kids in football?
Training at the Cliff, yeah. He was originally sentenced, but United's solicitors managed to talk them down to... And when he was sentenced, that was another... There were numerous flashpoints where Cantona saw his backside about it and was like, basically, I'm going to leave the game. I'm not standing for this. Like he was being persecuted. Mm. A remarkable spin around.
Yeah.
But that was one. When he was sentenced, he thought he couldn't come back from that. And then... The solicitor managed to wangle that into community service, and then of course, at some point during the suspension, I think it was the pre-season, United had arranged some friendly games for him.
Yes,
and they wanted him to play in them. There's some great stories from that. They managed to play one of these games, and I think it was against Preston or Rochdale. It was probably Rochdale. They played, and one of the, I think it was the goalkeeper or the defender from that game said to me, one of the youth players, because it was like 10 youth players and Cantona, and they were all instructed to pass to Cantona, and at half time they came off and some of them hadn't been passing to him, and Ferguson gave them all the air dryer. Why the bloody, this is all for Cantona. And ironically enough, the following one of these warm-up games was against Preston, and I think United were on a tour somewhere and Ferguson wasn't present for it. And the FA got wind of it and they had to cancel the game. Mm. As Preston were on the way to play the game, they had to cancel it because they said, well, it's an arranged game. That's what he's suspended from. And he again said, oh, I'm not having this. And they actually talked for a while about increasing the ban because of the contravention on it. You know, they said, oh, he's not supposed to be playing in these games. So they were talking about lengthening the suspension. So Cantona left the country. He went to France. Inter Milan had been trying for months to tempt United into a bid. Mm. United were not having any of it. In fact, during this time, just before the kick, Cantona had agreed to sign a new contract with United, but this threw that all up in the air. And it's amusing how this all turned around to Cantona's advantage, because it's incredible, because he painted himself as the protagonist and the hard done by victim in this. Somehow, in a way, got himself a new contract out of it with doubling his money.
That was because he had Ferguson on his side and that wonderful ability that good managers have to stand by players at times of adversity, because they never forget that. And Ferguson went out several times, I think, to Paris. There was one particular time where they were running short of time. They'd gone out for lunch together, Ferguson and Cantona, and I think Ferguson was short of time getting back on the plane to Manchester. And Cantona, or a friend of Cantona's, drove him to the airport on the back of a motorbike. But they'd kept in touch, and that commitment... It was to be repaid over and over again when he did finally come back.
On that period of time, that was the final time where Inter Milan made an offer. They made some kind of inquiry because they'd been notified that Cantona had fled to France, basically saying, this is it, this is the end for me. I can't stay here. So Inter Milan made a discreet inquiry, or indiscreet. Ferguson had got wind of that, thought that this was finally the time that Cantona was going to leave, and then went to France to convince him to come back, which is seen as one of the great interventions of his time. Cantona had already agreed a new deal at United by that time. And the story behind that is fascinating. After training one day, so this is while the ban was still going on in pre-season, or perhaps at the end of the previous season, Cantona's lawyers had been there talking with Martin Edwards to renegotiate the contract, and Edwards had basically said, well, because of the ban and because of the unpredictability of it, we can't commit ourselves to paying him this massive pay rise if he's going to go and do what he did before. So what we'll do is we'll give him a contract that we've never given anyone, which is a reduced salary but an increased bonus if United win the league in the following years. And the lawyers said, and his representative said, there's no way Eric Cantona is going to go for that. That is ridiculous. So Cantona came into the office after training to sit down with them. And Martin Edwards said to Cantona, he said, what do you think of this contract? And the lawyers are advising him, don't do that because it's only a guarantee if you win the league. And Edward said to Cantona, well, how many times do you think we're going to win the league in the next 3 years if you play? Testing him. And Cantona said three times. He went, if you've got 3 year contracts, how many times are you going to win the league? And Cantona held up his three fingers. He said, well, there's no problem then. Tested him on that. Mm. And because Cantona, his pride, wouldn't say that we won't win the league in three seasons, agreed to the contract, which was masterful from Edwards as much as it was from Ferguson.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
This is Love Sport.
So the press reaction towards Eric Cantona, like you said, Wayne, was pretty substantial. One quote, one headline I remember was that, I think it was The Guardian or The Telegraph, one of them said that he was the nitroglycerine in human form of English football, that is
Eric
Cantona.
Which I'd written that, yeah.
Yeah. But, Paddy, you had many dealings with him.
I obviously watched him a lot professionally, but no, I did the only... I'm pretty sure this is true. The only one-on-one interview with Cantona by a British journalist. I'm sure the French ones did. But it came about, it was quite early in his career when he still had a minder. It was a man called, he's unfortunately no longer with us. His name's George Scanlon. He was an academic from Liverpool. I'd met him while travelling to European games with Liverpool. He'd been taken as an interpreter, usually behind the Iron Curtain because he spoke Russian and, you know, East European languages, mid-European languages, plus French. And because he was so into football, George, he'd been an amateur player or even a semi-professional player in his youth. He was brought in by Ferguson to just help Eric with any, you know, language issues or any issues at all in settling in. Eric was quite... very, very strange and different in many ways, but particularly his lifestyle. Instead of living in the kind of Cheshire mansion in Alderley Edge or Wilmslow or Presbury, like the rest of the players could afford to do, he got a little semi in the kind of place where you and I would live, you know, in, I can't remember where it was, near Worsley, that part of Manchester. But before he actually moved into that, he... was living in a hotel in Worsley, and George took me out to this hotel in Worsley, and there was Eric Cantona. I couldn't believe it. I can't find any way of explaining how I got that interview, except that George told me that he'd need £100. Now, I mean, for a start, it wasn't very much. You know, it's not the kind of thing that would turn a footballer's head, even in those days, you know? You know, I'd never paid for an interview before. I mean, we weren't exactly on the, I think it was on The Guardian or The Observer or something at the time. You know, I wasn't exactly in multi-million pound checkbook journalism territory, even if I'd wanted, even if I thought it was ethical to pay for an interview. But I did pay for this. But I often wonder if Eric ever saw the money. I have to be honest, it did cross my mind whether Eric was actually counting the fivers that night in his hotel in Worsley. But that was it. I can't remember too much about the content of the interview, except that he was very polite. He was good. He talked a lot about technical things. I always used to love asking players about technical things, and he was up for that. And the other thing I can remember, oh, it must have been 1994, because it helped to win me Sports Writer of the Year, because the judges said this guy gets the big interviews. If they'd known I'd paid £100 for it, you know, they might have given the award to somebody else. No, it was a real privilege meeting him. But no, the idea that any English journalist or any journalist hobnobbed with Eric would be fanciful.
Mm. Worth it for the story alone, I think. That
£100, yeah,
Paddy.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's certainly a happy memory for me.
Well, Wayne, the comeback, of course, against Liverpool in 95, and then the double season that season, and then moving on eventually to his untimely retirement.
Yeah, or timely in the way, if you assess his career for what it was, it was fated to end that way. It's fated to end in a number of different ways, really, that going by the way, the 18 months or so happened after he came back. when he returned in October 95, he was a transformed figure, wasn't he? He was seen as angelic by the press. Mm. There was one occasion where we played against West Ham and there was a fight on the pitch with Julian Dixon and someone else, and Cantona was the peacemaker, having been the match winner earlier in the game. And that was late on in the game as well, when he could have potentially seen a flashpoint. He was brilliant, in not so much in the first few months after he returned. There was a little bit of a lull in his form.
It's inevitable rustiness.
And on top of that, because Kanchelskis had left, Ince had left, and Mark Hughes, his strike partner, had left. The week after Andy Cole had signed was when the kick happened, so he'd not had a real opportunity to play with Andy Cole as well, the record signing.
Took a while. They didn't like playing with him at first.
The first occasion where they trained together was on, because Cliff was frozen out, and on the day that Cole signed, or the day after he signed, they were training at Old Trafford, and a lot of the players didn't get the memo to train at Old Trafford, apart from Cantona. He did, and Andy Cole was there, and they were Cantona was quite pleased to see him initially, but like you said, Cole's limitations as a natural footballer.
Technical limitations, yeah. I mean, Cantona would be shaking his head. I mean, it was probably not very nice, you know. And it was
difficult for Cole.
To Cole's credit, actually, that he kept scoring while he must have seen that. He must have seen that behaviour. It must have knocked his confidence. So it is actually to his credit that he kept scoring and eventually became, despite what Cantona might have thought, a United legend.
Yeah, well, yes. 187 Premier League goals, I think. But it's
in
funny.
How many he get? About, more or less at one in two.
Pretty much. Yeah. But never really mentioned in that pantheon of great Premier League strikers.
His combination with when eventually Dwight York came and became his partner, it must have been like winning the lottery for Andy Cole, because finally there was somebody who wanted to have empathy with him, and that for me was one of the great partnerships.
So he learned to play with Cole sporadically and Paul Scholes more often than not, and you know, the partnership was still good with Ryan Giggs. He learned to play with these players, really loved playing alongside Beckham and Scholes, and but so these players really emerged. The thing to remember from that period is, and we shouldn't understate it in terms of the legacy that he had, those kids absolutely idolised Cantona. They, in the early days of 92, 93, they would stay behind training just to get the opportunity to play with Eric, to be one of the players that he played with. So they were always learning to play with him and impress him. So, and when he was there, he was their father figure. He became the leader of that side, which he waltzed back into. He was now the leader of that side in a different way to he was before. And Keane had matured into one of the best midfielders in the country. So it had a different dynamic to that side. And once they got used to it, Cantona was the figurehead, wasn't he? He scored a number of goals in 1-0 wins at the end of that season. I don't think there's ever been a single player who's had such an influence on a title race as Eric Cantona. Peter Schmeichel might disagree because he was pretty influential in that time, but Cantona, for me, was very influential. And then perhaps not as influential in his retirement season, not directly, if you look at Cantona's on-pitch influence, but the way that everyone else had matured around him. Beckham was scoring from the halfway line. He was running his own goal of the season competition, and Beckham idolised Cantona more than any other. And then Ryan Giggs had matured into one of the... He was realising his potential. Roy Keane as well. He'd become a real man under Cantona. By that time that he did retire, he'd almost given United this gift of a mature generation, really. He'd done the on-pitch maturing for that bunch of players. So it's more beneficial than just saying one Premier League title or one double. The impact he'd had was, as Paddy said earlier, numerous times.
The greatest catalyst at any club. Yeah. In my experience, anyway. Mm.
I think he still is well. He had real Cantona-esque moments in that season as well. We forget. I think, listen, he was never a goal scorer per se, but he went around 8 games without a goal in that final season. That included the games with Newcastle and Southampton, the 5-0 and 6-3 games. But he bounced back against Rapid Vienna away at Rapid Vienna, the game where Schmeichel produced that Gordon Banks save. And then when you think of games away at Forest, he did a sublime bit of skill where he kept it on his knees a couple of times. That's it, off the bar. Mm. Great pass against West Ham away from home. Of course, the Sunderland scored two in that with the famous chip.
Yeah, he did have his magic moments. Cantona's barometer of brilliance was so high that anything less than that was seen as subpar at that point, because he was so good and because he was so mythical in that. Mm. Like you said, he wouldn't score 30 goals a season, but his 10 or 15 goals, what he did score, would be like moments of artistry that defined the course of United's success. And they were brilliant to watch, but also pivotal in the way that they changed and shaped United's destiny.
You know, he always seemed to have space. Do you wonder if those early excesses, you know, Moncur, Tony Adams, Jeremy Goss, the nastiness that he exhibited early, gave him a little bit of space? In other words, people gave him a little bit of...
didn't want to get close to him.
Didn't want to get done. Didn't want to get kung fu kicked, you know? So I often wonder if that was the case, because he always seemed to be playing amid an aura, didn't he?
Although, having said that, Paddy, players not wanting to get close to him. John Moncur, in Cantona's last ever game, they lined up against each other as they were going out, and John Moncur had said, "Do you remember me?" And he said, "No." He said, "Well, you stamped on me for Swindon." And he said, "Oh, yeah, I remember you." He said, "Well, can I have your shirt after the game?" And he said, no. After the game, as they were coming off the pitch, he went over and asked him again cheekily, and Cantona gave him his shirt, which John, I think the son bought it off him at some point. But one player wanted to get close to him anyway.
Yeah.
So, Paddy, with all things considered, everything we've discussed, everything you know about Eric Cantona, his legacy at United?
Well, to start with the negative one, the famous book, Eric Cantona's Great Performances in Europe, would be a fairly slim volume. Right, there's nothing else that you can say. I mean, domestically, he transformed the club. He restored the swashbuckling style of the Busby era. He enhanced, under Ferguson, he enhanced Manchester United's image as more than a club, to borrow the Barcelona slogan, an entertainment, a passion, everything that really gives football its extra dimensions and makes it the sport that we love. He brought that to Manchester United in bucket loads. And I think also, and I mean the word arrogance is usually considered pejorative, but a nice sort of "we are Manchester United" kind of arrogance. Probably supporters of other clubs, even neutrals, didn't really admire it. But it'll always be part of United's history. And Cantona will always be woven into the tapestry of Manchester United. Probably more because of what he did in restoring the luster of the Busby era, arguably more than any other player.
Love Sport.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.